At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
This is Robin Roberts, and the Michael K. Show starts right now. Take it away, Michael, Don, and Peter.
Thank you, Robin, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Friday, April 9th, 2021, and we are coming to you from three different points in the world. I'm at Yankee Stadium, where I will be calling today's Yankees-Rays game in St. Pete. Don is in the studios of ESPN, where he'll be calling tonight's Ranger game. And Peter is in Florida, in Tampa, where he'll be part of the broadcast crew for WrestleMania 1 and 2. So we are certainly apart, but we're together for the next 4.5 hours. The other 19 and a half are certainly your responsibility.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I hope that everything is going well in your world.
Very nice. So far, so good after the vaccine yesterday.
Very good. I was worried a little bit. So you sound good. You feel good, and that's important. Your knee hurts a little, but that's a small price to pay.
Yeah, my knees are a little achy for some reason. But maybe that's just because of, you know, chasing after the Twins. I don't know, or just being an old man.
It's probably the latter.
Yeah.
And, Peter, you're doing well? Ready for WrestleMania?
Yeah, I made it down here. I traveled. You know, it's been a long, weird day. The New York hip-hop scene is mourning the loss of DMX, an all-time icon in hip-hop from Yonkers, who passed away at 50 years old today. So that's been a rough day, but I'm healthy and well, and I made it to Tampa, so no complaints at the moment.
All right, so let's start it off with Diamond Notes on the Michael K. Show, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. And it's strange, but waiting for the Yankee lineup today seemed more important than any other Game 7 that I could remember. Remember, Wednesday's game, Aaron Judge was not in the game, and they said that his side hurt a little bit, and they wanted to give him 2 days off because yesterday was an off day for the Yankees. Well, the lineup comes out today, and by now you've probably known that Aaron Judge is not in the lineup. And let's listen to Aaron Boone talking about Aaron Judge not being in the lineup. Here's a Yankee manager, I'd say about an hour ago, speaking in St. Pete where the Yankees are playing the Rays. Here's Boone.
Just felt like I wanted to at least wait another day. Had a good day of treatment late afternoon and into the evening yesterday. Same this morning, actually hit in the cage already, and that went well. And again, I just felt like it was something I wanted to at least give another day, and we'll see where we're at in 24 hours. And yeah, I mean, it's simply a wanting to play the long game and not force anything back in, just to be safe at this point right now. And, you know, we'll see where we're at in 24 hours.
Now, our very own Marley Rivera, who covers the Yankees for ESPN, she asked Boone if he would consider Judge injured.
That's a good question. I don't know how to answer that.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, and if I answer yes or no, it's going to be conflated a lot of different ways. So I don't have him in the lineup today. I feel like he could probably play today. So I don't know. More evaluation in 24 hours. It's a good question, but I'm not sure how to answer it.
You could tell that Aaron is tap dancing. He's trying not to lie to the media. He's trying not to mislead the media. He's trying not to betray Aaron Judge and whatever's wrong with him. But for Aaron Judge, 6 games into a season, to have now missed 2 games, this is the 7th game of the season and an off day, it's not nothing, if I can have the Bronx come out at me. It's certainly not nothing. So, yeah, there's always the problem of playing on turf and the wear and tear on the legs. But you just wonder what's going on. Now the obvious question would be, why not put him on the 10-day IL, backdate it to Wednesday, and then he only has to miss, you know, 7 games, and there's another off day on Thursday. And when I look at the 40-man roster, there aren't really outfielders in the system right now that would be of a great improvement to the Yankees. And, you know, they've got Talkman and they've got Gardner, so they're covered in the outfield. I don't think they're going to force it. Without him, it's a 25-man roster. They played with a 25-man roster until today when they did activate Justin Wilson off the IL. But when a 28-year-old man, soon to be 29, has wear and tear on the body after five games, I'm sorry. I can't sit here and put lipstick on a pig. It's Don and Peter, it's got to be concerning. Maybe he's in the lineup tomorrow and hits three home runs and right. everything goes to bed, but this is a little odd.
Well, it's odd because you're either injured or you're not. So if he's not injured, then he should play. But the third option is a weird one, and this is why you get concerned about Judge, because the third option is, I guess he's someone that just can't play long stretches of time, that he is someone that is as big and strong as he is. His body is fragile to where he just doesn't have the stamina, I guess, from a body standpoint, to go out there and play every day. How do you articulate that if you're Judge, I mean, or Boone or anybody, to say that he's like fine china? We'll put it out on special occasions, but if we use it every single day, it's going to chip, it's going to break, it's going to wear, and we don't want to do that. So we'll bring it out on Christmas, we'll bring it out on Thanksgiving. If we use it every single day, it's not going to hold up. Is that what it really just comes down to? And if you say that, then you're devaluing him as a player, because then he's not going to have that availability. That what he is a guy that in a perfect world cannot play over 150 games, can't play more than 20, 30 games in a row.
Yeah, but I think you could accept that, Don. He couldn't play five games in a row. That's what jumps out. I mean, if he played 150 games, I believe that the Yankees would have a party here at the stadium.
They, it's not gonna happen.
They would celebrate. But, I mean, for him to break down after 5 days. Now, there's a lot of questions that people have asked me. You know, the 3 days, the last three games of spring training I missed because of allergies. Was that the case? Was he battling something? Now, another thing that jumps out at me, and I wonder if it seems somewhat odd to you, he's taking batting practice right now as we speak. If you have a side issue, you can't go near a cage. Now, the other day, the last game he played when he had the three hits and the long home run, when he ran from first to third, he ran very slowly. That's usually not a manifestation of a side injury. It's usually a manifestation of something wrong with the leg. So I'm trying to connect the dots because they are somewhat limited in what they could tell us, like with hockey, upper body, lower body injury. But why is he taking batting practice if something wrong with his side? So Eric Bolin, a guy I respect, covers the Yankees for Newsday, tweeted out, I'm watching him take batting practice, and he's not taking it with the same vigorous swings that he usually does. Again, if there's something wrong with your left side, and he's a right-handed batter, why would you risk going into the cage and swinging the bat? So that doesn't make sense to me either. I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but I don't think it's good. I just don't think it's good.
But the fact is he's not playing. He's not available. And I don't think we need to know as fans what exactly is ailing. I always got crazy when fans would go nuts in hockey. Like, oh, upper body, lower body. Why can't you tell us what the injury is? I don't need to know. Is he playing or not? I don't care if it's the knee. I don't care if it's the shoulder. Is he playing or not? If he's not playing, all right, he's not available. If he is playing, go out there and get him. I understand from a strategy standpoint you don't want to give – the specific area of concern. But, Michael, we just want to know, is he playing or not? So is it the oblique? Is it his ribs? Is it whatever it is? Does that really matter at the end of the day? The fans want to know, is he available to play? How long is he going to be out? How serious is the injury?
It's concerning. I mean, especially if he misses this entire series. And, you know, then they move on to Dunedin to play Toronto. It's just odd that you'd have a guy who's so important to the team actually miss, could be four games, and he's not on the IL, and it's only five games into his season and six, seven, eight games into the Yankee season. It's alarming. It is alarming, especially because the Yankees have taken such great care with him and with Stanton to keep them healthy. Also, the day before when he had the three hits, they took him out in the seventh inning. And at that time, Aaron Boone said, you know what, we're just trying to rest him whenever we can. But why only him that day? So It just seemed odd. And then when you follow up the next day, he's not running from first to third very well, and then he doesn't play the day after that. And on top of that, he had not played three games at the end of spring training, which they attributed to, you know, battling allergies. So, again, I don't blame anybody for trying to spin or fudge or anything like that. We'd love people to just come out and tell us exactly what's going on. But they're under certain constraints as well because of HIPAA laws and your relationship with the players. But as Don said, he's not playing. Well, that's not a good thing. No matter what the specificity is,
right.
He's not playing now, and he's missed two games, and he's been out for 3 days, and he's still not able to be in the lineup. That's concerning.
But it's unlike anything I've seen, really, in sports. I mean, we talk about Kyrie's availability because sometimes he's got other things going on. But, you know, when KD's hurt, we know he's hurt. When Harden's hurt, he's got a hamstring. He's not going to play. Maybe he'll play tomorrow. Maybe not. I mean, there's always this unknown because, let's face it, even in science, we found this out with the pandemic, is you learn as you go. But what's so rare about him is, Michael, is that they don't tell you anything because I think that the real answer is what nobody wants to hear is this is someone that cannot play every day. Can't do it. Not possible. The way he swings, the way he plays the game, he cannot play every day. And he is going to need time off every now and then. Now, that's embarrassing. I'm sure Aaron Judge doesn't want that narrative out there. So we jerk around with, is he hurt? Is he not hurt? He needs a day. They don't want him playing on the turf. You know, wear and tear. All the different little catchphrases you have. But let's face it, this is a gem of a player, a superstar player. But he can't play more than maybe 100, 110 games a year. Can't do it.
But also, it's not like the Kevin Durant situation, right, where we know what the injury was. It's documented. And this is a part of his return. We don't, to Don's point, it's not one specific thing. We don't know what that thing is. There is no one thing.
Nope.
This is just a recurring theme. And, yeah, and by the way, this is not a fun subject because you can't be even someone who tangentially likes the Yankees and feel any joy about saying something negative about a guy who's not only incredible on the field but seems to be a great kid. But this is the reality that we kind of have to start looking at,
right,
as we get closer to a decision on what his future is.
And this is what we keep bringing up because this is where it becomes an issue. Yeah, the Yankees can live with it. He has not cost them any games, Michael. I mean, he hasn't cost them a championship.
No.
Right? He's
been
available
in the playoffs.
He's played in the playoffs. The Yankees continue to win their 100 games no matter how many games Judge misses. But when he becomes a free agent, there is no way. There's no way he's getting a long-term contract from this Yankee team. Why would you want to spend another 7 years with this? So yeah, that's the problem. When he turns 31 years old and he's a free agent, he's likely gone.
And what team would take a chance? Now, you take a chance on the talent. And maybe the Yankees take a chance on the talent, but a long-term deal, I hear what Don's saying, he might have to recalibrate what he expects.
Right.
And I think that's why he's probably so sensitive to this as well. This narrative does not help him for the future.
No, and nobody ever wants to admit as an athlete that you can't go. I mean, I think he wants to play. And I'm sure the Yankees don't want to test it out too much, but do you really want to have to deal with this? I mean, this could be the next Mickey Mantle, right? This could be a guy that's the face of this franchise and be here for the next 15 years. And I think everybody wants that to happen. The Yankees want it to happen. Judge wants it to happen. But we're in the infancy of his career here, and this is a constant issue. And you can't sign for that long term. Maybe there'll be a team out there when he becomes a free agent that'll say, listen, the guy's a gigantor. We can sell a lot of tickets putting him in there. I'll live with him missing games. But the Yankees aren't looking to sell tickets. Yankees are looking to win championships, and they want to make sure that their best players are around and are available. You can't lock up a guy long term that's and go through this every couple of weeks of his career. It'd drive you nuts.
Those are Diamond Notes brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. You know, I just thought of a great idea. Peter, why don't you call an Uber or a Lyft and
right,
just head to St. Pete, get yourself into the ballpark, and lean over. Say, Judgey, what's going on, baby?
Listen, I got a rental car, so I can just go over myself.
No, you don't even have to call it. Yeah. It's about a half hour from where you are.
You want me to do this?
Yeah, why don't you do that?
All right, I'll be back.
Didn't work out the last time we tried that. Remember when I was, like, looking for A-Rod?
Right. Yeah, you got scolded, too.
I don't know why I got scolded. I went everywhere I was allowed to go. Peter, this is funny. This is before you started with us. There was something with A-Rod. We wanted to know something. And we were in the trailer, so I grabbed my credential and I started running through Yankee Stadium looking for A-Rod.
As you should.
And then the Yankees got wind of it and for some reason thought I went in without a credential. And then there was this whole crackdown where you couldn't move 2 feet without showing your credential. But I went everywhere I was allowed to go.
Oh, you were exonerated. It was beautiful. By the way, we're celebrating our new 2 p.m. start time by giving away $10,000 in the month of April. There's been a great week because today, after we give away the $500, that's $2,500. As you know, this is my money this week. The next 3 weeks are the station's money. So listen later in the 2 p.m. hour. Be listening for the K Cash Sounder. See ya! See ya! See ya! And be ready to call in at 888-987-ESPN to claim $500 cash. It's all from your home for the hookup, 98.7 ESPN. Again, that's later in the 2 o'clock hour. Very quickly before we take phone calls, I found it interesting. We have a guy that helps us at Yes. He's a rules interpreter. Mm-hmm. His name is Rich Marazzi. He's a former umpire. And he wrote to us and said, if the Marlins were allowed, only 15 when a team protests a game, only 15 protests in the history of baseball have been held up, upheld. And he said that if the Marlins had protested, that this would have actually been held up. It would have been number 16. But last year, slid in, teams were not allowed to protest games anymore. The reason being, with instant replay, they think there's no reason every rule could be interpreted the right way. Well, this is one that can't be. And he said that what should have happened is they should have looked at the rule book. Because you can call for a rules interpretation, not just to look at the video, because it's not reviewable to actually look whether or not he put his elbow in. But they could have looked at a rule that if the ball was a strike, even if it hit him, it still should have been a strike, and that could have gotten overturned. And the Marlins didn't ask them to have a rules consideration. So, but they're not allowed. So people say, well, why didn't they protest? They're not allowed. Protests aren't allowed anymore because of replay.
So then, I don't know why they wouldn't be allowed protest, and then it'll be said, well, you can't protest because it wasn't reviewable, and then it'd be done with it. By outlawing the protest, then you led to this.
Right.
So why outlaw the protest?
Because they said that everything that you would protest about could be changed on replay, but this is one thing that couldn't be changed on replay.
See, what I've found out following sports, and I think Peter will agree with this,
you don't know,
is that when you think you've seen everything, when you think that you've checked every box possible, something happens that you've never seen before. So why would you ever pigeonhole yourself into not being able to change something that egregious? Nobody could ever anticipate that happening. But that's what's so great about sports. It's always the last thing you think that's going to happen that happens.
Now, Boone, I just think it's actually so easy. It's so easy if you make the grounds, the umpire has to be willing to acknowledge that they got it wrong. That sets such a high standard that you will not see regularly. So to me, it's a fairly safe change that's not going to affect you every day.
Now, Gio Urshela has been scratched from the lineup. Remember, he got tagged in the face to end the game on Wednesday and kind of wrenched his neck, according to Aaron Boone, but he was in the original lineup. So now DJ LeMahieu has moved from second to third, and Wade's at second. Now, what I would have done,
I don't think they
want to upset the apple cart. You're moving DJ to third because of Urshela, then move Torres to second because Wade's a much better shortstop than Gleyber is. But they don't want to upset and play with Gleyber's mind at this point, so they're keeping Wade at second. But that's the easy move to make.
I got to tell you, the Yankees find ways to make things so interesting. There's no longer that, just some random game in the afternoon in Tampa. Like, there's intrigue around the corner every second with this team.
They're fun to cover. Let's go to Dennis in Huntington. Dennis.
Big D.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Before I get to my judge point, we got, you know, the car meet. We got Domination. What about the Petey Birds? Huh?
Well, we have the Peanuts.
Yeah.
It's the Peanuts. P-Nuts.
No. But, Don, I do agree with you 40% of the time, every time. I think the Yankees have batter judge syndrome because they are so petrified of this guy getting hurt I think for the rest of the season, they're just going to do 2 weeks on, 1 week off, or 3 weeks on, 1 week off. And that might end up working out over the long run. And then once the playoffs come around, obviously use them every day because they just do not want this guy to get hurt. They are terrified of it.
Yeah, but Dennis,
it's
so
going to happen. He's just too big.
All right, so but here's the deal, though, Dennis. I hear what you're saying. You can't do that if he's going to get hurt in five games. He got hurt in five games, not in 20, not in 2 weeks, five games. And he was hurt in the fifth game. So, obviously, he got hurt in four games. So, there's no, like, schematic that you could lay out to keep him safe. They worked with him. Eric Cressy, their conditioning guy, guru, worked with him and Stanton all winter. Five games. So, you can't say, let's play him 2 weeks and then sit him 2 weeks. That, no, no, no. And Aaron's not going to want that either. You're going to play him until he gets hurt. You know, I don't think that not playing him, Don, or playing him a short amount of time is going to stop it because he got hurt in five games.
Right, but I think what the caller is saying is that if this is any other player that's feeling a little twinge in his side, they might be all right to give him a day off and then come back and try it again.
Right.
But not with him because I think they are afraid it'll do further damage and then they'll lose him longer.
Maybe. Let's go to Ray. Where were you born, Don?
Hawthorne.
Ray is from there. What's up, Ray?
How you doing? In the Conforto incident yesterday, I think one point that wasn't brought up was that the Marlins had a player, Derek Dietrich, that made a career out of leaning over the plate and hit by a pitch. He was on the Reds in 2019, got hit 25 times, like 300 plate appearances. But for 5 years before that, as a Marlin, all he would ever do is lean over the plate, did it to the Mets I don't know how many times. And I find it ironic that Jeter and Mattingly now have a problem with what Conforto did. Not that I'm defending it, but the Marlins have done this all along.
And well, Ray, I'll tell you, I don't think Jeter and Mattingly don't have a – no, I don't have a problem with what Conforto did. I don't think they do either. They have a problem with Culpa.
Yeah.
Conforto did nothing wrong, Ray. Absolutely. They might be ticked off at the result, but not at Michael Conforto.
Okay. I agree with that. I just think that it's ironic that after all of this, that this happened. And if you look on YouTube in 2019, Dietrich did it to the Marlins. And he just and the ball and the pitch was right over the heart of the plate for a strike, and he got hit. So I think the irony of all of this is just funny that it came back to bite the Marlins.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Ray, and I saw that on YouTube last night. There were all these Marlins who leaned into pitches. By the way, I looked at the video, didn't quite lean in as much as Conforto did, but leaned in. But you're right. I think the Marlins' problem was call it. I have no problem with what Conforto did, and I don't think then the Marlins understand that that's gamesmanship because they just then assume that the right call is going to be made. Try to get away with what you can get away with. Ball players all get that. They understand it. But the problem is with Culpa not making the right call.
Now, Boone was asked about that today in St. Pete on Culpa admitting made a mistake. Here's the Yankee manager.
It's tip of the cap. I like accountability. We all make a mistake. We all screw things up or maybe don't do something. And I applaud him saying it should have been a strike. Yeah, I appreciate that part of it. I mean, obviously frustrating if you're the Marlins and you lose the game and you know, but we're all human.
Yep. I thought he did a nice thing, but it doesn't help the Marlins at all. And by the way, Dietrich is at the Yankee alternate site. And he set a major league record in 2019 while he was with the Reds. He was hit by a pitch six times in one series. Six times in one series. Let's go to Frank in New Jersey. Frank.
Hold on.
Hello,
hi,
Frank.
Michael. How you doing? You and Don doing well. Hey, hold on. There we go. Interesting fact. In the last 331 some odd games, Judge and Stanton have only played together 26 times. That's very interesting. I also find it kind of, I think his contract is coming up, what, next year?
He'll be a free agent at the end of next year.
And I really think the Yankees are going to be taking a strong look at that. I mean, if this turns out to be an injury where he's down another, month to 3 months, I don't, maybe it's best that they, look elsewhere and get as much as they can for him. I hate to say it, but, you know, Mantle and whatnot would be turning in their graves with what he said at the beginning of the season. I'm not going to be going all out for certain plays because, you know, it's too early in the year for me to do that. I mean, that's crazy for a Major League Baseball
player.
Yeah, but
you know what? The Yankees want him to do that, Frank. They don't want him to go all out in games early in the season. They need him. And I was thinking about this driving in, Don and Peter. So at this point, what can you do? I mean, would you give him a long-term deal? He's been hurt all the time. What happens next year? He plays 155 games and hits 60 home runs. Does that erase it all?
Well, because then you'd be able to couple that with his rookie season when he was fine.
Right, so that's 2 out of 6.
Yeah, it's...
It'd be a hard call, right?
But at least you'd see it. See, my issue would be then, all right, do you think this is going to get better as he gets older? So if you do get that season, does that mean you lock him in for, you know, 5-6 year deal and hope that that's the way it's going to be? You're still looking at the law of averages saying 4 out of every 6 years are going to be compromised.
I think what you do, I don't know what the Yankees' plan is, but I think what they'll do is they'll say, here's $80 million for 2 years. We're going to overpay you, but we're not going to commit to a 7-year deal and get burned like this. Here's $80 million for 2 years. And that's just a guess off the top of my head. We'll take the short-term risk. We're not taking a 7-year, $280 million risk.
But honestly, Michael, and I love him, and I love watching him play. Are you betting that in the last year of his contract that's going to happen?
No, I don't know. I always contended that these were an injury-prone things because he got hit by, you know, a pitch on the wrist, and then he ran into the wall. But this one... And the side injuries, that's a product of size and strength that might be too big for baseball. I don't know. I mean, smarter people than me are trying to solve it. I just don't know. I'm not sure.
And that's like the argument I used to always have with Andrew about Carson Wentz. Well, that's a freakish thing. That's not like a recurring injury, so it's not about him being injury prone. But my philosophy is always, it's not about one body part that's specifically problematic. Sometimes people just have the bug, and it's a myriad of things.
Well, now, though, I mean, the calf and the side, that would lead you to think that the body is so big and baseball is unforgiving,
right,
and the torque that you create, that it's hard to stay healthy.
And the banging into the walls and diving, you're talking about a guy that's listed as 282 pounds and 6'7". So
he's
when he gets, we hits anything, it's a major collision.
All right, we're going to take a brief timeout. Remember, we're giving away $500 later on in this hour. We have Tim Kirchin at 3 o'clock. That's always fun, right?
Yeah.
So we got a big show. We're on until 6:30, and it's a full day for Don because Don's calling the Ranger game tonight.
It's right on 10:50 tonight at 7.
And Peter, I'm going to give you a food recommendation today.
Okay.
You get in that little car of yours, and you go Ocean Prime. Oh, it's unbelievable. It's right near the
really?
Big International Mall. You'll love it. And you have the peanut butter chocolate dessert. You'll start to weep.
It's what Prime? Ocean Prime?
Ocean Prime, which is right. It's right, you know, that big mall that you see. When it's
I'm
right
this
there.
Up right now.
Oh, it's so good. And if you can't get a table because it's always jammed, I don't know what the situation is COVID-wise in Tampa. Just eat it.
In Tampa? What COVID?
COVID
eat
what?
Eat at the bar. It's a great bar scene. You're going to
love. Is there an outdoor bar?
There's outdoor seating, I know. I remember that the Yes Crew and I sat there outdoors one day and ate.
How approachable would Peter be sitting there eating dessert alone, crying?
Why would he cry?
Because you said he'd weep. That's how good the dessert is.
But you know
that
what? He doesn't want to be approached. He just wants to enjoy life, and he'll cry from joy. I'm telling you, that peanut butter chocolate whatever, pie or cake, it's unbelievable.
Well,
you'll
thank
you
very
me.
Much
you will actually right. text me tonight and go,
I'm thanking you
thank
right
you.
Now.
Thank you so much. I love you, Michael. You led me to a great thing.
Right. Go during right, Kirchin.
And if you want, like, lighter food, if you want any lighter food, just go to Miller's Pub, which is on the right side, right across the street from the mall.
You know your Tampa, baby.
I've only spent, you know, every year since 1996, right. except for this one.
And from what I understand, if you want to see people nude, there's plenty of that down in Tampa as well.
Yeah, there's a place called Mons Venus, and then Odyssey 21.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doing porn.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just imagine being at a strip club eating dessert and crying alone.
Yeah, they don't have the good desserts at strip clubs. They have good fries, I heard.
But guys sitting there alone crying, that's kind of commonplace at strip clubs.
No, they should be. If they're not, they should be. Anyway, remember, $500 on the line and sometime before the 3 o'clock hour, 1-800-919-3776. It's Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you on Yes. 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. How about this, Peter? This is from the Yankees. Urshela's out of the lineup. Reaction to vaccine. So not feeling great after getting vaccinated, which I get. I mean, I've been very fortunate so far. I feel good today. Some, what is it now, 28 hours after I had the vaccine yesterday, my second shot. I'm not sure what the Yankees got. I know the Rangers got Johnson & Johnson on Tuesday night. Certainly didn't play great, losing to Pittsburgh last night. This is going to happen, right? I mean, even if you know you're not going to feel well, even if you know that you might be out of the lineup, you can't pass on the vaccine if you want it. It's too important, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess he's got, you know, the reaction that people get, you know, kind of flu-like symptoms, and that's why he's out of the lineup.
I mean, listen, you never know. It could randomly hit a team and 10 of them get it, especially with the odds I've been seeing on J&J. You know, people tend to get sick. If I had had to play a game the next day, I would have been iffy.
Hey, you're talking about a fine-tuned athlete, and doesn't take much to knock
them. No, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, you, in what you do for a living. But I'm saying the professional hockey player or baseball player or basketball player that are playing right now getting vaccinated, even if they feel like they can go, I'm sure they're going to be compromised in some way, shape, or form. But, yeah, so it's not because of the collision at home plate the other night. It's because of how he's feeling after getting vaccinated. I'm not that surprised. Based on the people that I know. It seems like more people than not are feeling something. And it's probably tough to fight through. And so that's why he is out of the lineup. Let's get back to your busy calls at 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Mike in Hawthorne. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Don. How are everybody? I don't want to pile on with the judge thing. I've been on hold for a while. I want to kind of turn to what you were talking about earlier in the week, Don, about how it's so hard to, the game that we grew up with is just changed so much, and how the sports has changed so much, about how it's so much about the dollar, and about how you're trying to get a younger group, a younger people to come on and be part of this and get involved in the game. And I had a situation with the Yankees. My daughter's getting married in 2 months. Huge Yankee fan. She watches probably 100 games a year, goes to games. She's a doctor at Holy Name Hospital, and their wedding party booked 18 tickets for Yankee Stadium social distancing in February. And then when everything changed and the Yankees took the tickets away, they lost those tickets. We tried to get them back, and we've reached out to the Yankees 100 different ways. I was on News 12 about this, and it's just that the baseball world and how everything is so sterile right now, and they don't care about the fans. If George Steinbrenner was running the Yankees, he found out about what happened with this situation, my daughter would be throwing out the first pitch. And what they did with the Met guy the other day, taking him out after 77 pitches, whatever. And then now with Judge admitting not going full bore, it's really hard to really jump back. And I remember your dad when I was a kid, great guy, great baseball guy, you know, taught you real well. It's just getting harder and harder to really dial in and support what we're trying to do. And I love baseball. I still coach it. I still try to help my friends with it and stuff. But it's just getting harder and harder, Don. And I'm so disappointed in the Yankees. I can't even tell you.
Well, I mean, listen, COVID's obviously messed up everything. And thank you so much for the call. Hope the family's well. But Peter, I know winning's the end all be all. It's what we all hope and strive that our teams win. But it's so strange that you're making like decisions in April for how you're going to be effective in October when tomorrow's not guaranteed to anybody. Can't we just play it out? Listen, I get you shouldn't play with an injury that could really hurt you. You know, I get that you're sometimes going to have bigger fish to fry and you've got to kind of pace yourself, right? But, Peter, when I was growing up, the Mets and the Giants had no chance of winning championships. I still enjoyed watching them, you know, and I get it. The Yankees want to win a championship, and that's all their fans want. But you know what? On an April afternoon, I'm sure a Yankee fan wants to sit there, turn the TV on, and watch Aaron Judge play. And that's frustrating to a lot of people. So I know you want to be ready for the championship, but can we just play? And then when we get to September, we can start making decisions on being ready for October, not April, not in spring training, not on opening day.
The only thing that I did not feel on that call was whenever we have a complaint about baseball, going to, let me tell you what it would be like if George Steinbrenner was here. We end up rewriting history a little bit, Don, don't we?
I know. But
like, it's just not it. That's not George Steinbrenner was not always regarded as the perfect owner.
But
again, winning changes everything. But that was not always the case.
But you know what's interesting about what Mike said? George wanted to win more than anybody. And George, rightly or wrongly, would probably be demanding Judge to fight through this and play. So it's just become so structured and planned. Listen, I don't know how hurt he is, but this is such a 21st century thing. Guys played through injury. And you know what? They played a long time. Yeah, you had some guys that suffered catastrophic injuries and they couldn't go. But you know, we're talking about, you know, Jim Cott pitched like for 24 years. Barely ever missed a start. Nolan Ryan was throwing 100 miles per hour, you know, at 47. You know, so we try to protect these guys, and yet they get hurt more than they did back in the old days. You're protecting them from what? Just getting hurt again? Kirchin will join us coming up at 3 o'clock. More of your calls at 1-800-919-3776. Got to talk football later on, Peter, because I've got a question for Giant fans that needs to be asked. And also, another one of those big games for the Knicks tonight, Peter. You know, Memphis is good. Memphis actually has a better record than the Knicks. We got to start winning some of these games and start to learn how to win some of these close games. This whole, we're going to make it to the playoffs, so what does it matter? I want to start learning about this team, and I think this could be a very, very interesting contest tonight that'll be heard right here on 98.7 ESPN New York at 7 o'clock with the pre 7:30 tip. And then the Rangers have a date with the Islanders tonight, and I'll be on that game, and that will be on 10:50 a.m. with coverage beginning at 6:30. It's all happening here on The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to The Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
4:03 in the big city. Don, Peter, K-Show. Yankees up 4-2 on the Rays. We're keeping an eye on that. Mets off. They'll play game two of their series with the Marlins tomorrow afternoon. Knicks, Grizzlies coming up at 7 o'clock on 98.7 ESPN New York. Rangers and Islanders coming up on 10:50. All right, we know Wilson's going number two. Worst kept secret in the history of sports. But what ends up happening a lot of times, Peter, is like the pendulum swings back and forth. Nobody knows anything about Wilson. Now everybody wants Wilson. Now they trade Darnold. Everybody knows they're taking Wilson. Now there are people that aren't sure Wilson's the guy. You respect Paul Feinbaum, right?
I do. He's a Jewish man who does college football. How can I not respect this?
I mean, does college football is like actually underrating it. He is college.
Yeah, football. No, he is college football.
If college football was a big steaming pile of dung, he'd be living inside it, rubbing it all over his face. That's college football.
Excuse me?
Paul Feinbaum.
I've never heard that description. Is that how you would describe your interest in hockey? A pile of dung? Of dung? Excuse me? That you rub in your face?
I was going to say pool. If it was like college, what I was going to say, here's what happened. Just my warped mind, all right? If college football were like a pool, he would dive into the deep end. You know, he'd be all in. And then I got caught up in the steaming from Michael, who he says, piping hot thing. And then I just followed the train of thought. I'm sorry, Paul. I'm not suggesting you have some sort of a strange fetish.
Can we just hear from Mr. Feinbaum now? Thanks. Go ahead, Paul.
He was on DCR earlier today, and he explains why he prefers Fields over Wilson.
I just like him. I've always liked him. When he went to Georgia, and I'm basing a little bit of this on that, but I mean, I had people tell me that saw him on the practice field that they have never seen a quarterback look like him. Why didn't he work out? Because Kirby Smart runs a vanilla offense and never gave him a chance. But I mean, I just trust those impressions. And so I'm going to stick with that. And that's all you can do. But I think Wilson is you're really taking a flyer on somebody that looks like the composite quarterback you put together on an imaging machine. But man, I'm not going to trust him in the NFL.
Wow. So it's not so much he would take Fields over Wilson. I mean, he just doesn't believe in Wilson.
And for the record, Feinbaum is not like he's not a yo-yo talking head like me, who, you know, generally covers sports and has a good take on things. This is a guy who college football is his life. He knows the game. He is the game. As Don said, he rubs dirt, like college football dirt, all over his face.
Right. Whatever college football is, he's bathing in it. He loves it. And when we were all together in the studio, I'm in the studio today because I got Rangers tonight.
You sound great, by the way.
Thank you. I feel good too, which is surprising.
Well, you got it yesterday?
I got it yesterday at 10:30 in the morning.
And you've had nothing.
But my knees ache a little. I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
Could, but that's actually sounds pretty good.
So, yeah, and I still got a lot more work to do, so knock on wood. But anyway, we would sit there, and his show would be on, and he just knows everything. Now, he knows everything, meaning he watches the games, he follows it. He could be dead wrong on this. But that's not nobody. Like you said, that's not just somebody who occasionally popped on a BYU game and wasn't impressed with what he saw. I mean, that's a guy that's paid to kind of follow this sport. So it just shows you how nothing's guaranteed. This is the conversation that I was having during Christmas when the Jets won that game over the Rams and basically took themselves out of the Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence isn't guaranteed. You know, we don't know who's going to end up being the best quarterback. 10 years from now, the best quarterback out of this draft may be somebody that might not be taken in the first four picks. Now, I like the odds that Lawrence is going to be good, but it's a crapshoot, man, and you hope the Jets get this right. Because unlike a lot of other teams that are taking a quote-unquote flyer on a quarterback, as Paul said that Wilson would be, they don't have an alternative. They don't have a quarterback. The Jets did. So not only do you need Wilson to be good, but you also have to make sure that Sam doesn't turn out to be, you know, the second coming down in Carolina and is leading that team to a championship, and you're scrambling next year trying to find out, all right, who's our next general manager who's going to pick our next quarterback? On that subject, Paul was also on DRC today, and he believes Darnold will have success in Carolina.
You talk about the difference between living in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the Big Apple. I mean, yeah, it's like a college town, really. I mean, it's a big city in the sense that they have big buildings and an international airport, but there's no pressure here. And he's following this, okay? He's following Cam Newton, whose last two or three years here were an absolute disaster. And then Teddy Bridgewater, who never looked like he could find the line of scrimmage because he was always looking over to the side. And Joe Brady, to me, is a really bright guy who now has that 1 year out of his system. He's made the transition, and I think it's a comfortable place. There are no expectations whatsoever. There is no media whatsoever. That will be perfect for Sam Darnold.
I don't know if there are no expectations. Maybe little, because I'm not sure how much they know of Sam and Carolina other than three uneventful seasons in New York. But if it's a college town, they knew what Sam was at USC. They knew he was taken third overall. They didn't give up nothing to get him. So there may be some expectations. Looks like they're completely cutting ties with Bridgewater. We thought for maybe 30 seconds when that deal was made, Peter, that Bridgewater and Darnold would compete for the starting job, but all the momentum has moved from, all right, we're done with Bridgewater, we're bringing in Sam. So I wouldn't say no expectations. There'll be fans that are expecting something from him.
Yeah, I agree. Just about what that expectation is, and I certainly hear his point that it's not a high expectation, because people understand that, you know, when you're moving what Carolina moved, and it's not nothing, but they didn't mortgage their future to get a starting quarterback. There's a reason they're available for that load, and that is because he's an unknown commodity to some degree. You know, now, listen, I've said this many times, though. I wanted him in Washington. I thought the risk you could take on Sam Darnold was a bet worth taking relative to just grabbing Ryan Fitzpatrick for 1 year. I still feel that way. I'm disappointed they couldn't get him. But also, I understand that people outside of New York really don't have a good idea of who Sam Darnold is. Hell, Don, we cover him, talk to him every week. We don't have a good idea of who Sam Darnold is yet.
Oh. Artie in Brooklyn was right there on this particular subject and just hung up. Artie, what's the matter with you? If you're still alive, there's no excuse you hung up.
Also, during ENN tonight, going to have some pretty interesting Deshaun Watson updates.
Well,
his lawyer's been speaking, and there's been some things said that are pretty interesting.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and so is Carlin. He is going to be our special guest on ENN.
Carlin.
Because ENN,
yeah, the big fella.
If it can be a three-man show, we'd like it to be. So since there's no Michael, we are going to go with Chris, who will be on at 6:30 after us. Irene in Central Islip, you're on ESPN New York.
Hi, guys. I'm glad that Michael's not here today, because I kind of disagree with him.
Ooh.
About the Jets. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. How many quarterbacks are they going to draft? Really?
Well, until they believe they found the right one, Irene. I'm with you. Again, I would have kept Sam, but if they believe Wilson's better, Irene, forget Joe Douglas is not a slave to all the bad quarterbacks since Joe Namath. All he has to do is, what quarterback gives me the best chance to win? And if he believes it's Wilson, he can't be swayed away because of what Idzik did, or because of what Maccagnan did, or because of what any other general manager with the Jets did. He's got to go with what he thinks is the best chance to win. And if it's Wilson, then doesn't he have to take him?
You know, I think there's some flaw in that logic, though. How can you expect somebody coming in from the draft to be like the savior, like they did when they drafted Sam?
Because you're projecting. You draft players predicting what they're going to be. And if they look at Wilson the way Ernie Accorsi looked at Eli and said, I believe this is the guy that's going to lead us to a Super Bowl, then I think it's a moral imperative that you get him. Peter, we could disagree all we want, but Joe Douglas can't worry about the 50-year history of the Jets looking for a quarterback. He just has to say, who do I want to be my quarterback? And not who Sala thinks his quarterback should be, or Woody Johnson, or Don LaGreca, or Peter Rosenberg, or Michael Kay. If he's convinced Zach Wilson's the man, he's got to take him, period.
I agree with you, Don, wholeheartedly. And I said wholeheartedly, so you know I mean it.
Yeah, sure.
But at the same time, I understand the frustration of the fans of here we go again. Of course.
Well, yeah.
That's, by the way, that's part of, Don, I have to imagine, that was part of what your logic was when saying you wanted to see more from Sam. Was like, hey, we just did this. Let's see this through. We don't know enough. You know, how many times have we heard that even if you love Wilson, you're talking about him coming out of college being at best comparable to Darnold coming out of college. So that logic is there of why are we doing this again? Let's just see this through. It's not like he's 28.
Yeah.
He's 23.
I know, but you know what? He wasn't taken, and I think this is a big part of it. And Michael denies it, but everybody we've asked said it's a part of it. Mike Tannenbaum admitted it's part of it. Mel Kiper admitted it's part of it. Joe Douglas didn't draft Sam, and Sam is at best an unknown. I would have brought him back, but I can understand people saying, listen, it's been 3 years, nothing's happened, he's an unknown. We hope better coaching is going to help. We hope better personnel is going to help, but we can't guarantee it, and we can't guarantee that Wilson's going to be a stud either. But what's the difference between Sam Darnold and Zach Wilson? Joe Douglas's quarterback would be Wilson. It's his pick. And I do think there's a lot of momentum in that organization that if you're a Maccagnan guy, they get rid of you. They ended up hating Maccagnan. They fired him out of the clear blue sky because they hated him. And everybody that was drafted or picked up by him is now gone. You don't think that has something to do with it? And now you're going to put your entire history or near history, what's going to be coming up, this recent history of you as the general manager with the other guy's quarterback or your quarterback? I think that plays into it big time. They systematically got rid of everything Maccagnan did. Everything. And the biggest move they're going to keep? I'd do it, but I can understand Joe not wanting to do it. He wants to fail on his terms, not somebody else's terms. And if everything is equal, why not go with your guy?
I just hope that wasn't the main reason.
No, it's not the main reason, but I think it's a reason.
I hope not. I hope not. We don't know that.
Well,
I hope it was really what you think is best here.
Here's
the thing.
It'll
be very interesting to find out.
Here's what I'm hoping, if I'm a Jet fan. Because we don't know. We have no idea what Wilson's going to be. I want Wilson to be drafted because Joe Douglas is so over the moon in love with him. It's all he thinks about. He right. dreams about Wilson. And he has have him.
Yeah, he wants to go full Rex tattoo.
That is why you're okay, because if he feels that way, then you can understand it. But I'm with you. If it's, I could take either of them, but you know what? I'm going to go with Wilson because he's my guy. That's a problem.
That would be upsetting.
Let's just change the pace. They know the history, but why does Joe Douglas have to be a slave to things that happened before he got here? As far as he's concerned, Jet history, the Jets are 2 years old. He's got to make decisions based on, this team hasn't had a quarterback since Joe Namath. I mean, this team hasn't won a Super Bowl since 1968. I mean, you see some of the bad decisions that these guys have made, the up and down, that they're hitting the reset button, firing coaches, firing general manager. He can't worry
because
about
Don,
that.
Don, another thing to remember, if it's all things equal, really, Sam and Wilson are equal, think about what you could have gotten for that pick. Think about the weapons you could have put around Sam.
I know.
What could you have done with this draft? If they're equal, that pick, if they're equal, they're not equal. If they're equal, Sam is the better value. Because you get to keep the picks.
Well, that's
you would have gotten a haul.
Well, that's what I was saying. It was never about Wilson versus Sam. It was, if I keep Sam, then look what I can do with the number two pick. And look at the trades I can make and look at the weapons I can get Sam. That was all part of it. But I'm okay with it if Joe Douglas couldn't stand the sight of Sam and is in full-bloom love with Wilson. If that's the case, then we can't kill him. I mean, after the fact, we can. But right now, you got to follow your heart. I'm sure that was sung in a song someplace many times. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. You're on ESPN. How are you, Ira?
Hey, what's happening, Don? Hey, Peter. How are you guys?
Good.
Yo.
Good, all good, all good. So, you know, listen, I'm sure Joe D made this pick because he feels Wilson is better. Has nothing to do with it. It was a Maccagnan pick with Sam. And then, you know, it's amazing. This could be, I guess you're going to have to get a lawyer sports bureau to figure this out. Sam, you know, with the Panthers, and listen, they not only, he might be the first quarterback that the Jets invested three draft picks in and then traded him, and now Carolina trades for him. And gave up another three picks. That's six draft picks invested in Sam Darnold. So for the Panthers, hopefully it works out right. And hopefully for the Jets, it works out right for Wilson. But at the end of the day, you know the draft is a crapshoot. I mean, you guys like have Tannenbaum and guys come on the radio. They say, well, he's going to be still a superstar. You got a guy like Feinbaum who says he wouldn't touch him. I respect everybody's opinion, but it comes down to two things. You can't measure a guy's heart, and it's hard. You got to get drafted by the right team.
That's it.
You take a guy like Patrick Mahomes. If the Jets had drafted him, do you think he'd be anywhere near with the talent that he has right? They've had the last 2-3 years, and with the coaching they have,
no.
Do you think Mahomes would have been able to perform the way he did in Kansas City?
No, listen, I'm of the belief, Ira. I don't know if you agree with this, that there's probably not that much difference between all of these quarterbacks, right? They were all Americans in high school. They were all heavily recruited. They all played for big time programs. And now they get drafted. And yes, some are better than others, but I think they're all very close to each other. Just one guy gets drafted by a perennial winner with great offensive minds, and another one goes to a place where quarterbacks go to die. And then one has a great career and one doesn't, right?
I couldn't agree more with you, 100%. And you get a couple that slip through the cracks. Hey, well, let's go back. Dial it back to Dan Marino. Do you think Dan Marino does with his career with the Jets what he did with the Dolphins?
Hey.
Probably not.
Here's the age-old question for New York football, Ira. Let me ask you this, because you know you follow the Jets and I follow the Giants. Is it possible that if Ken O'Brien's a Giant and Phil Simms is a Jet, things are completely different?
100, probably Ken O'Brien goes to the Super Bowl with the Giants.
Right.
And Phil Simms doesn't have the career that he had with the Giants, with the Jets.
Right. And Phil Simms becomes Ken O'Brien, and Ken O'Brien becomes Phil Simms, right? One's got his number retired by the team, and one was, hey, he was a good quarterback. He had his moments, but he never took us anywhere. Well, there's a reason why no quarterback has ever taken the Jets anywhere. Do you think it's just bad luck, Peter? Or have they had the quarterbacks, they just didn't know what to do with them? And the reason I say that is I forget his first name, and Ira probably would remember. My brother got me, I don't know if I told you this on the air, on Easter, he went to, with his wife, because that my brother's life is wrestling and then like antiquing on the weekends with his wife.
Wow, he really is like me.
And he went to an antique shop with his wife, Violetta, and at the antique shop, there was a magazine rack with old magazines. He bought me the 1969 football preview.
Oh, it's fantastic. What a gift.
And I had my nose, like Easter dinner, all I'm doing is looking at this, you know, with the Giants, with Homer Jones and the Jets. The cover of the magazine is Joe Namath this good, because they just won the Super Bowl and all the different divisions. It was just really cool. And I'm reading about the Cleveland Browns. I think Nelson was their quarterback. You know, Cleveland looking for a quarterback. I'm like, oh, look, that was a problem in 69, and until Baker Mayfield is a problem now, right?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Certain organizations just can't get it right. Well, do you think they just never had quarterbacks, or do you think they just screw them up? Yeah, they had Brian Sipe. They had Bernie Kosar. But still, Cleveland's always been looking for a quarterback. Jets always looking for a quarterback. Lions always looking for a quarterback until Stafford. And even then, you know, they end up losing him.
Sadly, my team's kind of entered that space too.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, but the big profile on Sonny Jurgensen in the 69 preview. Big profile.
Well, that was kind of the last time. I mean, Theismann. I got to give it to Theismann. It was
yeah.
Settled when they had Theismann.
And you remember the helmet then with the arrow?
Mm-hmm.
Now it was, they can't go back.
They wear that again. Well, I guess they won't be wearing it, but they were wearing that again.
Yeah, that would be like their throwback. They had that helmet where it was on the side of the helmet, and then they had mm-hmm. the one where it was the stripe down the middle. They had a feather one, and then they had one with the arrow was the stripe, and really interesting. Football's always cool, but that 69 preview, man. If we were on Yes, I would have brought it in and showed you. It's really, really cool. And you can get like a yearly subscription to Sports Illustrated for $3.80.
Well, and they might even, and a few years later, they'd throw in a nice phone for you.
That's right, football phone. Let's take a look at this day in Yankees history, brought to you by Woodbridge, by Robert Mundavi. On this date in 1996, the Yankees played their home opener against the Royals, Peter, in snowy conditions at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. Andy Pettit made the start, battling through the bad weather and picking up the win, thanks in part to Paul O'Neill.
That's when men were men.
Jim Leyritz and Mariano Duncan, who each had two RBIs in part of a 7-3 victory. That's this day in Yankees history, brought to you by Woodbridge, a proud sponsor of the New York Yankees. Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, making classic wine for over 40 years. More of your calls. We're talking some football. 1-800-919-3776. Don and Peter on the K-Show until 6:30. Then it's Carlin on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
5:03 in the big city. Don and Peter take you up until 6:30. Big ENN coming up
Sure it is.
6 o'clock with the big fella. I'm going to be doing Rangers Islanders on 10:50 at 7 o'clock tonight. And give a listen to the Knick game tonight. Real special moment. Knicks Grizzlies at the Garden, and Pat O'Keefe, who you probably know on this radio station, fills in on the weekend every once in a while, does pre and post for the Knicks and occasionally pre and post for the Rangers, will make his Knick play-by-play debut tonight on 98.7. So best of luck to him. Should be cool. Getting chance to do it with Brendan Brown. So he gets his first Knick game. He gets it at the Garden, and it's not a nothing game. Memphis is three games above 500, and the Knicks got to start learning to win these games and get themselves some separation here, because goodbye to the 4 seed, 5 seed, 6 seed. Miami and Boston have already passed them. I think this is a game you want to get tonight for sure. Now you don't want to drop the 3 games under. Let's go. Beat Memphis. So that should be a good call.
By the way, Rory McIlroy, who hit his father with a golf ball yesterday.
Is that true?
You didn't see that?
Is that like Chuck Knoblauch hitting Keith Olbermann's mom with a baseball?
Yeah, basically, except it was his own father. And it's not like this was because he was 10 feet away from him. It was like a 150-yard shot that hit his father. And I guess that was an omen of things to come. He's now 8 over. Justin Rose still in the lead, 7 under. Next big name that you care about there, Don, would be Jordan Spieth at 5 under.
You're God, still excited?
I enjoy having it on, but listen, I know you get upset, Don. We remember Sniff 'em Dead. We know you despise golf.
You just love Tiger. Sniff 'em Dead.
But man, what you will not do is deny that boy, him not being involved. I mean, it's like a titmouse right now. It's quiet, Don.
Very
it's quiet. I mean, imagine how much would we have mentioned it already today if on day two Tiger was 5 under.
Oh, that becomes a conversation. Now it's not a conversation. I have to admit that it's a conversation if Tiger's doing something, and right now Tiger's recuperating. That's all we know about Tiger. The Yankee game, which is going on right now, Michael calling it from Yankee Stadium, even though it's down in Tampa. I know you had it on, and you saw that they were losing 9-4. Early in this game, they were down 2-0, and an error with 2 outs and nobody on opened up a 4-run inning for the Yankees, and they took a 4-2 lead. And in that inning, Giancarlo Stanton had a 2-run single, and Aaron Hicks had a 2-run home run. Two of the guys that have been abused by the Yankee fans, and you're thinking, all right, maybe this is the start of something big. Well, 7 runs later, the Yankees are now down 9-4. Kluber not great in this one, lasted just 2 1/3, 5 hits, 5 runs, 3 were earned, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. That's the thing that's puzzling about him, Peter, is he usually has really good control. This is 2 outings now in which he's been all over the place. So,
but fortunately, Nick Nelson had a hold my beer moment for Corey Kluber.
Yes.
1.2. He had 1 2/3, 4 hits, 4 runs, all of them earned, 1 walk. 3 strikeouts.
Yeah, it's funny in this day and age in baseball that you can pitch poorly and still like have 3 strikeouts in an inning and 2/3. Like, no matter how bad you pitch, you still get your strikeouts. But so the Yankees are trailing 9-4 as they bat in the top of the 6th. So that's a conversation. We talked about the Conforto situation and baseball. We'll see if they make any changes. Nothing announced yet, but I would assume that they'll probably toy with replay, so something like that does not happen again, as Ron Culpa actually admitted his mistake So that, to me, is enough to try to change things. But it didn't change. Mets win. They got the day off today, the traditional day off after your home opener in case it rains. So they'll be back in action coming up on Saturday. And the Knicks have Memphis tonight, as we mentioned, in one of those you-got-to-get type of games. The NFL draft is less than 3 weeks away. We've been discussing that. So there's a lot on the table to discuss at 1-800-919-3776. And let's go to Rommel on Long Island. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, Don?
Good, man. How are you?
Love your show.
Thanks, man.
Good, good. I just wanted to say something about the Michael Conforto getting hit by the pitch. I want to know if you guys agree. I liken it to when a basketball player jumps into the shooter to initiate the contact while he's shooting the three, and he gets the call and he shoots the three free throws. Would you agree with that?
I think he's using
the rules of the game. Technically, it's not. Even though I frown upon it myself, but I do know that that's part of the game.
I think it's similar in the gamesmanship of it, where hey, you're trying to get an edge, right? But what's different is there's a difference between kind of fooling the umpire into believing that there was a penalty or that there was a foul. Earlier this week, actually it was Saturday, Peter, the mm-hmm. Penguins were playing the Bruins, and I forget who it was on the Bruins, kind of sticks Sidney Crosby in the chest. And Sidney threw his head up like he was decapitated. And yep. drew the penalty. He was able to fake the official into thinking that he was high-sticked in the face and got a power play out of it. Now, that's what he's talking about. It's trying to get an edge, try to fool the umpire into gaining an advantage.
But question, was it a penalty at all or no? Should it have been a penalty? No.
It was just a glancing
stick off the chest.
Right. It was just contact. And it wasn't like a stick. It was like the nub of his stick, and he made it seem like he just got the nub right to like the temple and threw his head back. It looked ridiculous. When you see it live, you think, oh, maybe he got high-sticked. And you see it in slow motion, you're like, oh, my God, give him the Academy Award. How ridiculous is that? And Sid's known to do that. And I think you do get a reputation. If Conforto had done this 100 times in his career, then you know what? This is a little much. But I think – that what the caller said, yeah, that's comparable. What's not comparable is how it ends up being called. It's one thing to be fooled if you're an umpire, but to not know the rule, I mean, that's just a bad job. So you still have to have a problem with the way all that was handled. And the Mets benefited from it. Good for them. But you would like to see something like that get changed. That was bad. I mean, it's getting talked about all over baseball. I mean, the umpire had to apologize, which does nothing for anybody, Peter. We've all had that in the NFL. Washington gets screwed on a fumble that should have been a fumble that wasn't, and they screwed up replay, and they send a letter to Daniel Snyder apologizing that they screwed it up. Yeah, what does that apology do? You still lost the game. You like to get it right. And for the most part in sports, they have ways of getting it right. And everybody in the world knew it was wrong, and they can't do anything about it. And that's what's wrong. And hopefully baseball will do something about it, because if that was Game 7 of the World Series, Peter, now you got a problem. Now there's an issue.
What would he even do, honestly?
Well, you would do what happened with the Rams and the Saints. Cry about it for a month and then change the rule during the offseason. So if you're Major League Baseball, what you do is thank God it didn't happen during the World Series. Thank God it was just the for the Mets anyway, the fourth game of the season. And let's make sure that it doesn't happen again. And what I would do is I would be speaking with the Players Association right now. I'd be talking to all the owners right now and try to get this changed as soon as possible so it doesn't happen again. I wouldn't wait till next year. I wouldn't wait till the All-Star break. I'd try to get it changed now. So baseball right now should be thanking their lucky stars that it happened in Game 4 of the season and not Game 4 of the World Series, where there'd be major problems here. It's bad enough what it is. So change it so that the next time this happens, that it can be corrected. Or is baseball going to drag its feet and talk like Tim Kirchen did? Well, you know, you can't give that to the commissioner. And everybody's so worried. Listen, I didn't like what the NFL did. I hated the rule change. I hated replay now having judgment calls on pass interference. But at least they did something, Peter, and it didn't work, and then they got rid of it. That's being proactive. They changed the rule. They quieted everybody down. The rule didn't work, and then they killed it. What's wrong with that? Try things.
I'll never understand why not. What's the downside? What's the downside of trying?
Because everybody gets up in arms and, oh, now everybody's going to complain to the commission. They do it anyway. Every time there's a bad call doesn't mean the commissioner's got to get involved all the time. But when it's a situation that it was seen by everybody, talked about all over the country, and the umpire actually admits the mistake and apologizes for it, then change it.
It's not rocket science.
That's right. There's bad calls in every game. But this was just not your random bad call. Correct it. Do it. Miles in New Jersey. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Miles?
Hey, Don, Peter. Big fan. Me and my dad bond over your show like every day.
Really?
Just wanted to say that. Thank you. Yeah.
That is very
quick
cool.
Quick question.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you guys. You guys provide great entertainment. So I know there's a lot of talk of the Sam Darnold now, Zach Wilson with the Jets. But I was thinking the same situation next year with the Giants. Like, what if Daniel Jones regresses this year? Next year, I don't think there's a big QB draft. So why don't the Giants, like, draft a QB later in this draft to get, like, Kyle Trask or J.B. Newman?
Because, Miles, we're worried about him, but it doesn't sound like the Giants are worried about him. And unlike the Jets last year, the Giants have actually been aggressive in free agents trying to get the guy weapons. So maybe we are in the same situation with Jones at the end of the year, saying we don't know what we have and now we got to give him money. But Peter, at least they've gone out there and gave him the best shot to try to win this year. Went out and signed some weapons. So that's the different story. They're gonna really get a chance to see. And it does sound to me like they're all in on Jones.
Oh, for sure. Although, Tom, what's that? What does that add up to, unless you play well?
No, you know, of course.
At this stage, it's one thing if you're proven, but you're all in on Daniel Jones. You are all in. But I guarantee you, if they have a 6-10 year next year, in which he's basically the same as he was this past year, then it doesn't amount to anything.
Right, but at least they can look in the mirror and say, all right, well, listen, we gave him the best chance to succeed, and he didn't. So it's on him. Let's move on. Not give him nobody. Do basically nothing all season and go, boy, he really hasn't shown me anything. Let's go get a quarterback.
Well, what would you do? What would you do? It would be after year three, and Daniel Jones is basically the same as he was last year.
Well, then I think you got to start planning an exit strategy, don't you?
I don't know.
Now, don't give me the whole, well, there's no quarterbacks coming out. Where were we on Zach Wilson last April?
Oh, I was very into him.
I didn't know he existed. I'm being honest with you.
I appreciate that.
we would be talking on the air. We'd be talking about Lawrence, Fields, and the kid from BYU. So on April of 2021, I'm supposed to make a judgment on what quarterback everybody's going to be hot for a year from now when they haven't even played the season yet? So, I don't know college football really at all compared to the experts. And the experts seem to think that there's not really any great quarterbacks coming out. Let's find out. Let's reconvene in December. Let's reconvene next April and see. When we actually have a college football season with fans in the stands. Because you heard the doctor yesterday. By the fall, things should be close to the new normal. Where we'll have an actual full schedule of games and we'll have fans in the building. And then you tell me whether it's a weak college quarterback draft or not. Not on April before the 2021 draft. Let's go to Tom in Northport. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Tom?
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Good.
So I was just kind of thinking about the trade overall that Joe Douglas made for Sam Darnold. And I know, well, Michael's not on the show, and I know he's made this argument that he should have traded him sooner rather than later. But didn't Schefter, like, report that the Panthers started with a fourth rounder, like, a month or two ago? Who's to say other teams that were trying to acquire Sam weren't offering the same offer?
I think that if Sam was available a month ago, I think they would have dealt him. I think there would have been a better package out there. I think Washington would have been a little bit more interested. I think that some of the teams that have made deals, like Chicago, might have been more in. I really do. Because that they didn't get nothing for Sam. I mean, a second-round pick next year and then two additional picks is pretty good. But, Peter, don't you think that if a month ago Washington had made a phone call that they could have had Sam? And it sounds to me like Washington made that phone call and the Jets weren't sure. I think if Sam was available, if they made it known they were taking Wilson and they were trading Sam a month ago, they would have been able to, I think, get a little bit more than they got. I think they definitely would have gotten at least a second round pick this year.
I'm really curious about what Washington would have been willing to give up for Sam, and where this idea of this deal fell apart, on which side.
I don't know, but obviously you got a pretty decent package. Where who were the Panthers battling with? Was Denver in? But if you're trying to trade him a month ago, Peter, isn't Chicago in? Is San Francisco in? I don't know. And if you decided on Sam, then certainly you could have traded the second-round pick to San Francisco and gotten a lot back. So they definitely dragged their feet. Whether it burned them or not, we're going to have to wait and see. Let's go to John in Northport as well. We're popular in Northport. That's where our PD is from. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, John?
How's it going, guys? Just to talk a little bit about the Jets. And, Don, the point that you made before about having a new GM every 2 years, you know, I'm a Jet fan, so I'm not making excuses for them, right? I understand where they're at. Again, we're rebuilding again. It's frustrating. But for you guys to pour it on and keep coming after them without the proper facts, you started with Bradway, right? It's not a new GM every 2 years. Yes, they're making mistakes with Idzik. McCagney wasn't the best. But get the facts right, you know? Not a perfect organization. But you know what? I think they have the hierarchy right now.
Well, what facts did I get wrong?
Well, you're pouring it on saying that, well, they have a new GM every 2 years. That's not the truth.
I mean, you're being a little Captain Literal.
You're being
man.
Captain. I'm just saying they changed.
No, and yes, I am. But you guys are sitting there as non-Jet fans pouring it on.
Hold on.
They deserve it. They deserve it. You don't think they don't deserve it? You just casually said that the Idzik and McCagney, that's an embarrassment. You don't think it's an embarrassment, John? Wait a minute.
You went all the way back. If you said
I go all the way back because I was working with them. I was there. 16 years I did the pre- and post-game show. I'm not talking out of my ass. I work with Terry Bradway. I work with Mike Tannenbaum. How many general managers do you go through in 20 years, John?
And how long were they? Yeah, but you're saying every 2 years, making it like it's a joke.
It is an absolute joke that you've gone through general managers as quick as they've done. In 20 years, you've had Bradway, Tannenbaum, Idzik, McCagney, and then Joe Douglas.
Okay, so that's not every 2 years.
Oh, my God. So, again, you're playing Captain Literal, man, but don't you think that's a little much?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't think it's an embarrassment, John? John, you don't think it's an embarrassment that they tell John Idzik, you've got to trade Darrell Revis and rebuild? He's the general manager for a year, did exactly what he was told. All of a sudden, Woody Johnson goes, I don't want to rebuild anymore. We're going to fire you. We're going to bring in Mike McCagney. Tells Mike McCagney to spend money, try to win right away, and then out of nowhere, after he handles the draft, after he handles free agency, they fire him. You don't think that's embarrassing?
I'm not saying that's not embarrassing. But yes, I'm being Captain Literal Man, right? I wish Michael was here, right? Sure, to help me, back me up here. But you guys, you know, as Jet fans, don't want to hear, just keep hearing the negative over and over again.
Well, stop being, what am I supposed to say, John?
How about looking forward?
I'm sorry, John. I'm sorry that your sensibilities can't handle criticism. I just said to you, obviously, you can't handle it.
I'm calling you out.
Hold on, John.
John, here's the numbers for you, okay? GM's in 01, 06, 13, 15, 19. That's bad, dude.
15 is brutal. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not here to defend
And did I not say, John, Did I not say I'm a fan of Joe Douglas? I said they finally got it right where there's a football guy, not a committee of decisions. I have looked forward. I like the fact that Joe Douglas is making these decisions. You can't deny the fact that this is a big, big deal for Joe Douglas, but I'm a fan of Joe Douglas. I think they're doing the right thing, making decisions. But you're going to sit there and defend how this organization has been run? How can you possibly defend
I'm
how they've been run?
How it's been run. I'm not defending how it's been run.
Yes, you
I'm
are.
Saying that you and Peter are piling on.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. They've got to do a better job.
Okay.
They've got to do a better job, John.
I agree.
They traded about John. Just say it with me, man. It's been an embarrassment. And if you don't think it's an embarrassment, I am embarrassed for you. Because they just traded a ton of draft capital to get Sam Darnold. Just did it 3 years ago. And now they traded him away, and now they're going to try again. And it wasn't that long ago, they traded up to 5 to get Mark Sanchez. So this is the third time that they're taking a quarterback in the top 5 in the last 10 years. They've had 5 general managers in the last 20 years. I exaggerate and say every 2 years instead of every 4. Like a new general manager every 4 years is that much better. And you're going to call me, wait on hold, and rip me and Peter for criticizing him, saying that, oh, Captain Literal Man, it hasn't been every 2 years. I'm sorry, it's been every 4. Is that much better? If there's an organization in sports that deserves to be criticized, it's them. And you know what? I'm not hiding. I've had conversations. When they fired McCagnan, I was in a meeting with the organization and I told them I thought it was a joke. We're not hiding behind what we say. I worked for them for 16 years. They treated me like gold. I loved working there. There are really great people that handled my end of that organization. And I've got every reason to find some positive to talk about. But you know why I can't? Because there isn't much. I didn't realize John from Northport was actually related to the Johnsons. It was John Johnson that was on the phone. Did you realize that, Peter?
I had no idea.
I didn't know. It was John Johnson from Northport. Oh, my God. We're being fair. We're spitting facts.
God. Oh, yesterday we were piling on the Mets for not being into for basically just being honest about the Conforto play, and now you're pouring on the Jets here.
Hey, I'm sorry, man. They are on our air. We've been partners with them for 20 years. They're good people. But I'm sorry. Where have I exaggerated or not made a cogent point about how they've been run over the last 20 years? How have I been wrong? What, because I got the math wrong? It's not every 2 years, it's every 4. That's what you're going to kill me on? 5 general managers. Good people. Terry Bradway's a good guy and a good football guy. So's Mike Tannenbaum. I don't know about John Idzik. He was here for 3 seconds. Or you can't say 3 seconds, Don. He was here for a whole year. Captain Literal Man, he wasn't here for 3 seconds.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Captain Literal Man.
They are good people. They know how to handle their money. They are a professional football organization in every way, shape, or form, except when it comes to football.
Well.
And you know how I know that? Because they've been looking for a quarterback for 50 years and haven't been able to find one.
Right. Yep.
And they're not the only one. A lot of teams can't get it right.
But you got to be honest about that. You're one of those teams now. I mean, that's been. No. They're it.
And
it was them in Cleveland.
Right.
It was them in Cleveland, and now Cleveland's good.
Right. And even in our own town, it looks like the Islanders have gotten it right. Do you realize, and I wanted to bring this up, Peter, because I don't know how much you've been following, the Islanders have a legit chance of winning the Stanley Cup. Our next New York sports championships might be the Nets and the Islanders.
Yeah, I know.
Not the Knicks, not the Yankees, not the Mets, not the Giants, not the Jets.
Ed Cranepool.
It could actually be the Nets, which is almost a foregone conclusion now, quite possibly the Islanders. Fun little exercise coming up, Peter. Andrew did some work.
I heard about this, and I'm excited about it.
On retired numbers. And we're going to have some fun with that coming up next. It's Don LaGreca. It's Peter Rosenberg. It's Chris Carlin coming up at 6 o'clock as he's been added to the ENN staff on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Oh, God, I love this one, too.
They all sound pretty good. I got to dive into the catalog. Here on now, the Michael K.
One,
Show.
Go ahead, Don.
Here on the Michael K. Show, we're celebrating our new 2 p.m. start time by giving away $10,000 in the month of April. Every Wednesday in the 2 p.m. hour, be listening to the K Cash Sounder and be ready to call in to claim $500. I can play it for him, right, Anthony or Andrew? I can play, give him a taste of what it sounds like.
See ya.
There you go.
If you
and
want
be
to do that.
Ready to call in and claim the $500. It's all from your home for the hookup, 98.7 ESPN. Peter Rosenberg continues.
That song, What's My Name, a DMX classic that I love, the sports association that I have with it, is that, Don, what was the last truly meaningful Mike Tyson fight?
The last truly meaningful? Would that be Holyfield?
I was going to go Lennox Lewis.
Okay.
Obviously it was a loss and he was destroyed, beaten pillar to post.
Yes.
But in terms of like the sports world truly stopped still. It was 2002 in Memphis against Lennox Lewis at the Pyramid. And it was a gigantic deal at that point in my life. I mean, my Tyson obsession was at the highest level and he's coming back and he'd been building towards this. He'd had all these sort of whatever fights over the previous few years with Julius Francis and Orlin Norris and Francois Botha and Lou Savarese and all these random fighters to eventually get there. He'd had the whole, I'm going to eat his children, and we finally get there, right? Don, I am so nervous. I had a little party at my little townhouse that I lived in College Park. They were called Knox Boxes. They've since all been destroyed because they were literally subpar living that humans shouldn't be subjected to. And me and my best friend Ben lived there. We had a party. I had the Lewis Tyson poster on the wall. 30 people came over. And Mike Tyson appears on screen for the first time walking out of the tunnel. And it was to that beat, What's My Name by DMX. I will always forever associate that. Now, of course, moments later, it became very clear that this was not going to be Mike Tyson's night against Lennox Lewis. But the memory is wonderful just the same. We still say rest in peace to DMX, who passed away at 50 years old today.
Yeah, it's just an absolute shame. But honoring him as every rejoin, thanks to Anthony getting the music in. Andrew,
now let's talk about this thing, because if you missed the program yesterday, we had a conversation. A rumor came out. So Charles Oakley said on a podcast, I believe it was James Posey's podcast, that he said that the Knicks actually came up to him and asked him to come back to the Garden and get the number 34 jersey hung up in the rafters, and he basically said he wasn't interested. Now, we all agreed that's insane that he wasn't interested, but the more interesting debate really came from whether or not Oakley would in fact be deserving to have that 34 hung up in the rafters. So now, Don, tell us what Andrew came up with, because I personally am overjoyed about doing this.
All right, we got like three categories of retired numbers for players that are currently playing on the 9 professional sports franchises in the 4 major sports in New York. All right.
Okay. Yep.
Then we have category number 1, which is the no-brainer. Who is the no-brainer definitely getting his number retired on a current roster of the 9 teams?
What's the next category?
The next category would be guys who are on track.
Okay.
And the third category, guys to keep an eye on.
I love this. I'm thrilled about it. And I'd like to say first, Don, that for me, let's do a draft. If we're drafting and I'm going first for category 1, which is that one's on track.
Category 1 is guys who are a lock.
Sorry, lock. Jacob DeGrom, to me, is the biggest lock in the city right now.
And if this were a draft, I wouldn't be able to get my card in on time because I don't think there's a number two.
Wow.
Right? Who? Who else on the Mets? Alonso? He's been here like 3
years.
No,
there's no other lock. We'll talk about the other categories with the Mets, but certainly no other lock.
And there's no lock on the Yankees, right?
No.
Who are their best players? Judge, we've had so much conversation about him not being able to stay healthy.
DJ.
So he's not a lock. No, DJ, this is only his third year with the Yankees. He's no lock.
No.
You know, Cole's been here only, you know, this is only his second year. And, you know, Gleyber Torres could be in the on-track conversation, but he's certainly not a lock. There's no lock on any. Really, I mean, Panarin's been here two years. You know, maybe Zibanejad, but you need to see more. I don't think there's another lock. I don't think there is.
Yeah, there's not on the Giants.
Or the Jets.
Certainly not on the Jets.
And the Nets. I mean, who would be – all those guys just got here.
No, the Nets are not locks either. So, Andrew, did you only have DeGrom? Was he your only one in the lock category?
Yes.
All right, so let's move on to category two, Don. On track. Who do you have as on track?
I would say KD would be on track.
But that presumes a lot, but yes. If KD plays the rest of his career, and it's another, what, 6 seasons, and they're in Brooklyn, pretty much regardless of what happens, he just continues to be this guy, his jersey's going up, right?
I mean, I think all three of them, right? Let's say they win the championship this year. Over the next 2 or 3 years, they're competitive for a championship, maybe win a couple, KD, Kyrie, Harden. They all end up staying here, you know, 5, 6 years, the greatest years in the history of Nets basketball, going back to the ABA days. I could see all three of them going up, can't you? I mean, Reggie Jackson had his number retired. He was with the Yankees for 5 years. I mean, if you're talking about 5, 6 impactful years of 2 championships, competitive every single year, would you be that surprised if all three of them are up in the rafters?
No, but it's hard to say on track. It's hard to say whether they're on track or keep an eye on because we just don't know how it plays out over time.
Well, clearly, if they play the way they're playing right now, I don't think it's going to take much time because they're probably the closest of all the teams that's going to win a championship in New York. And once you win a championship, then I think the door really opens up for all three of them. Alonso would be a guy that would be on track for me. Right? 50 home runs, you know, popular guy. I think he's on track, right? If he just continues to play the way he's played his first 2 years, I could totally see it happen.
And I would also like to argue for keep an eye on Noah Syndergaard. Because of the history he's developed here
and
the camaraderie with the fan base, if he comes back as Thor – and, like, over the next few years, because, I mean, the truth is, Noah's career has sort of, it's been up and down, right? I mean, the lows have never been that low, but the highs have never been quite DeGrom, not even close to DeGrom high. So the question for me is, if Syndergaard resigns here and is around for several years, Don, and becomes a guy who every year is winning 13 games, And the Mets win a World Series during that time, and his whole career is kind of paired in tandem in popularity with DeGrom, I could see him going.
Another guy on track would be Panarin with the Rangers. Now, Panarin's about to play his 100th game as a Ranger, and the only one to score more points in that span, his first 100 games with the Rangers, was Mark Messier. So he is clearly on track. He continues to play at the level he's playing over the next, you know, decade or even for the length of his contract. He will be on track to have that happen. And the same with Zibanejad. They continue to put the numbers that they're putting up for a foreseeable amount of time. Then they definitely are on track because they're putting up the numbers to be in that conversation.
Yeah, if the only other person in your category after 100 games is Mark Messier, then
that's pretty special. Would you put Saquon on keep an eye on or on track? Because he's had a lot of production.
I would go keep an eye on.
Yeah. See, he would be a keep an eye on. Adam Fox with the Rangers would be a keep an eye on. He might win the Norris Trophy this year. Barzell with the Islanders, I think, would be keep an eye on because he's putting up some phenomenal numbers with the Islanders and they're banging on the door for a championship. Is there a Jet?
Marcus May, keep an eye on?
Yeah.
You can keep an eye.
I guess you can keep an
eye. It doesn't hurt you.
You can keep an eye on Becton if you want. You know, but
sure.
There are people that don't think that really his season was all that great, but still, I mean, but everybody seems to be happy with the pick.
But the funny thing is, they just got rid of the guy who would have been on track. Borderline, I mean, not lock, but certainly on track, was Jamal Adams.
Without a doubt. He would definitely be on the track category, that is for sure. Join the conversation, 1-800-919-3776. The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save, it's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Don and Peter on the K Show, ENN with Chris Carlin coming up at 6 right here on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.